Yeah, so there's one vision of the future. Hi, folks. I'm Pete Hendrickson. I'm gonna be talking with you for the next couple of hours, and we're gonna be talking about the future. Back in the 1960s, when the Jetsons hit the airwaves, the Americans and probably everyone around the world had ideas that were very positive towards the way things were going to go into the future, and that program certainly reflects that. Flying cars and basically a life of minimal work and lots of leisure and everything good for everybody was pretty much the story. One thing that was significant to the story, I suppose, not necessarily intended by the creators who were basically doing a cartoon purely for entertainment, was the fact that people remained people. All the behaviors and anxieties and insecurities and fears and weaknesses and so forth of human beings were still in play, and that's how they were able to have a show, because those are the things that the program keyed around. The technology was different. The things people had to work with, the tools, the gimmicks, the machinery and so forth was different, but the people who were using all those things remained the same as the people who had been living in the Middle Ages and in ancient Rome and the Stone Age. And this gave the writers things to wrap their stories around. So, but that was a very positive approach. A very positive view. Views can vary a little bit, and we're going to talk about of some alternative views as well. And before getting into the details of that, I want to talk a little bit about some current events, because they're going to be relevant to the conversation about the future that we're going to get into. And by the way, just so you know, I'm going to have a guest on who's going to help me discuss the near-term future. Sophia Smallstorm is a longtime friend of mine, and what I would describe kind of as a polymath. Really, she's a woman that does deep dives into a lot of different subject areas, and knows how to do that sort of research and study, and ends up with a very eclectic body of knowledge. She's really a fascinating conversationalist, and I'm looking forward to having a great hour with her starting in a little while. But before that, I want to talk about a couple of current issues in the news. Many of you may have already seen this. Start off with the fact that it's been discovered, or at least it's been acknowledged. As of yesterday was the first I had seen of this material. It may have been some things about it that others might have seen earlier, but for the most part, I think not. Been acknowledged just in the last day or two that vaccine recipients, the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines in particular, I think, especially young vaccine recipients, and especially for some reason, as far as the information so far is concerned, especially young male recipients in particular, are manifesting a dangerous, sometimes fatal heart inflammation problem, myocarditis, at a rate as much as 25 times higher than that problem normally appears in a population. The most dramatic information on this is out of Israel, which had been one of the earliest places to engage in a broad vaccine campaign. Young people in Israel were vaccinated, I think, for the most part in their entirety, as of the beginning of this year, or in that neighborhood. And so they have the earliest batch of people from whom the information can be derived. They have the test sample, in other words, whereas most other places had not gotten around to vaccinating younger people that early, focusing instead on the much, much more vulnerable older populations. And so in Israel, that's where we see this 25 times higher than normal rate of myocarditis. Germany has now, I believe, instituted a brief, at least a temporary, at least ban on vaccinations on the basis of their own discovery of these problems. And the CDC is convening an emergency meeting of some form in the next few days in order to deal with their own observations of this problem. Now, interestingly and relevantly, this morning on a national news show on television, one of the major networks, I don't recall which one, the network's house pandemic boosting doctor, who has been appearing for the last year and a half, you know, telling everyone to, you know, follow the science and all that, meaning do what you're told by people like him, poo-pooed the news about this myocarditis issue with the assertion that in most cases the inflammation is relatively mild. But I want to point out that this dodges the central issue here. It doesn't matter that it's mild. The main issue is that the risk of great harm from catching COVID-19 to young people especially, and that's the category that we're particularly concerned with here, although really to any fit and healthy person of any age short of, truly extreme age, is tiny. The risk of harm, great harm from catching COVID-19 is tiny. It's tiny to virtually anyone, particularly tiny to younger people, and especially to people who are in good health otherwise. To those young people in particular, that risk approaches a literal 1 in a million chance of grave harm. Literally, 1 in a million. That's been the outcome determined in most countries. If you're below 18 years old in particular, your risk of dying from COVID-19 infection is 1 in a million. 1 in a million. So it's virtually nothing. In light of that fact, there isn't any rational argument for those people to take a vaccine that poses any degree of threat, excuse me, to them. And right now we have another recognition of the fact that the vaccines that are being touted right now actually do pose a threat. This is just a new threat. We've long known of adverse reactions and many, many deaths, associated with these vaccines just here in the U.S. It's in the thousands. And the number of adverse reactions reported are in the tens of thousands of varying degrees of severity. These are numbers that far, far exceed the numbers of adverse reactions that halted vaccine programs in the past, and yet for some reason are simply being ignored today. And this is the point I want you to keep in mind. These are being ignored, even though they are dramatically more serious and pervasive than numbers of adverse reactions that had halted vaccine programs in the past. And the risk of great harm from COVID-19 is acknowledged by all authorities, the CDC, the FDA, WHO, everybody, as being extremely small. Extremely small. The flogging of this everyone must get vaccinated thing continues unabated. It continues unabated to the point where a purported doctor, a guy who claims a medical degree and to be operating under the basis of the Hippocratic Oath on this network news show to which I referred a minute ago, is saying, hey, don't worry about it. Some people get this inflammation, and he may even have acknowledged, yes, and some of them die from it, which they do. But it's in most cases, it's mild. So don't worry about it. Get the vaccine. Why get the vaccine? Well, you've just determined that the vaccine represents a potential threat, and the disease against which it is presumed to protect does not represent a substantial threat. The people that are this is being pushed on, and right now there's a big push on to begin vaccinating or expand vaccination of young people, even people not only under 18 but down to as low as 6 months old. These people are receiving no meaningful benefit from the vaccine, and taking it poses a known risk. It's known risk in terms of this new acknowledgement of myocarditis. And let's remember, there are many other known risks as well. Beyond that, there are a potentially innumerable number of unknown risks. This is an untested vaccine. This, you know, as much as they want to talk about having done tests, that means they did a couple of months of tests. These are experimental drugs. They're still listed as experimental drugs. Every single person who's taking them is taking an experimental drug. They're part of the experiment. And we have no idea what the long-term effects of these vaccines is. We don't know. We do know that these are not normal vaccines. These are not vaccines that consist of dead or weakened samples of the virus against which they're intended to protect. These are genetic engineering tools. These are messenger RNA injections that are intended to change the structure of your cells to cause your cells to produce the thing against which you were supposed to be becoming protected, in the expectation that your immune system will then generate an immune response to the spike protein that your cells have been told to make. So your cells are being told to make a dangerous component, which is known to cause vascular harm. Maybe that might be the reason for the myocarditis inflammation eruptions that have been recently being seen, by the way. Your cells are being told to do that rather than having a measured, controlled volume of the actual virus against which you're to be protected put into your system, so that your immune system can go to a full-bore protective mode and give you durable protection against the entirety of the virus design, which also protects you broadly against variants, something that the vaccines are unlikely to do. So we have experimental drugs with known risks that are being pushed on people who don't need protection in the first place. So why is that? Let's skewer another point about this, the vaccination regimen. There's no rationale for compelling or even urging anyone to take the vaccine for the sake of other people, which is one of the prime psychological ploys that has been used here. The notion that, you know, take the vaccine so that, you know, you don't get grandma sick. Well, you don't need to take the vaccine in order to not get grandma sick. Grandma needs to take the vaccine. That's all that needs to happen. If grandma is a person at risk beyond the minimalist numbers that apply to healthy people and young people in particular, then grandma needs to get the vaccine. But once grandma has had the vaccine, it doesn't matter to grandma or her health profile whether you have taken a vaccine or not. You don't need to do anything to protect other people. Other people can take their own protective measures, and then that's it. They're done. So there's no reason for the push to encourage or even compel, as in the case of, you know, universities, which across the country have announced that the students can't come back to class on campus in the fall this year unless they've been vaccinated, period. Unless they've been vaccinated. Even if they've already contracted the disease and developed robust and durable immune response naturally, which many have, huge numbers have, actually, even those people are being compelled to get a vaccine and show their vaccine passport in order to get onto campus. And this, by the way, just to put a little icing on that nasty cake, staff and faculty are not required to get the vaccine in these universities as a general rule, just the students. And ask what sense that makes. Again, goes to the point, why is this being done? It doesn't make any sense. And let's follow up with one further item about all this too. Let's not forget that we have cures for COVID-19 infections, and we have had them for a very, very long time. In fact, a new study just concluded at St. Barnabas Medical Center in New Jersey, and announced yesterday, I believe, shows that even in patients already so far gone as to be hospitalized and on ventilators, hydroxychloroquine plus azithromycin and zinc cut mortality in those patients by 200%. Now, this is in addition to extensive applications of the same drug combination having long been shown, since last March, frankly, to cure COVID-19 infections when administered in low doses promptly upon discovery of the infection in a simple office visit treatment costing practically nothing. And maybe this is, you know, a helpful insight into the whole situation. Ivermectin, another inexpensive, well-known drug, has also long shown powerful benefits as a treatment for COVID-19 infections. In fact, a batch of lawyers in India right now is suing the WHO for having produced false information about the hugely beneficial effects of both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine in India in suppressing what had been an outbreak of COVID-19 infections, or at least reported cases anyway, during the course of this spring, which has now collapsed and is credited in that collapse by many Indian medical professionals, and including one provincial government, of being a consequence of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine usage throughout the country. The WHO has been trying to deny this, and this group of Indian lawyers is suing over what they are alleging to be a misinformation campaign, a deliberate misinformation campaign. Further along the same line, I want to mention that Alameda County in California, the county where Oakland, California is located, has just downgraded its COVID-19 death toll report by around 25%. The total number of people who've died from COVID-19 since the start of the pandemic went from 1,634 in that county to 1,223, according to its new data as of May 23rd. The new count only includes those people who died as a direct result of COVID-19, with COVID-19 as a contributing cause of death, or in whom death caused by COVID-19 could not be ruled out, according to a statement from the county. Previously, the county had included any person who died while infected with the virus in the total count for the jurisdiction, which is what everyone does. And that's by following guidance given by the CDC back in March of last year. As case in point, as one story that I saw about this Alameda County change reported, people who died in car crashes but tested positive for COVID-19 were counted in the COVID death toll. Think about that. People who died in car crashes but just happened to have been tested positive for COVID-19 were counted as COVID deaths in Alameda County. And that's true everywhere in the country. The COVID death toll is grossly overinflated. Even the 25% drop that Alameda County is adopting here, as they say in their statement, they are still including not only people who died as a direct result of COVID-19, but also people in whom COVID-19 is attributed as a contributing cause of death, which is a little bit of a vaguer standard there. Contributing cause, you know, there could be a lot of contributing causes, and, you know, COVID's contribution could be about the same as what, you know, everyday flu or pneumonia or even a common cold caused. Any kind of respiratory distress can be enough to contribute to a death from other comorbidities. But they're also including people in whom death caused by COVID-19 could not be ruled out, which is about as vague a standard as is possible to make. So they're still overinflating their COVID death toll numbers, even after dropping them by 25% because of taking out cases of people who died in car crashes but had been, were claimed to have been COVID infected anyway, and so were included in the COVID death tolls. So we have a situation here where it is an effective admission that the COVID death tolls have been grossly inflated. The consequence of this, just right off the bat, would lower the U.S., you know, official total from whatever it is today, I don't know, 500 and some thousand, down to 475,000 or something along that line. Or I'm sorry, to 375,000 or something along that line. But not only that, but this also lowers the infection fatality rate figures for COVID-19 by a corresponding amount. So the, you know, minimalist, really, really tiny risk of dying from COVID-19 infection in the case of most young people and healthy people of any age is even lower just per that little change itself. Okay, we're about to go to a break. I want to share one other bit of data on the general subject of the COVID-19, the characterization of COVID-19 as this dramatic threat. Another thing that debunks that perspective. We'll get it at the, on the other side, and then I'm going to be bringing a guest in, and we're going to talk some about some of the implications of all of this. So stay with us.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Boost your immune system naturally this year with olive oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that olive oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Okay, we're back. Want to again urge everyone to visit thepowermall.com. Great place, great products. Custom on the powermall.com helps keep this show going, and that's really important. It's important to me. I hope it's important to you. So I urge you to do your shopping at the Power Mall and thepowermall.com. So we were talking about before the break about a bunch of interesting information recently coming to light with regard to the COVID-19, both the increased threats of the vaccine regimen now discovered, you know, to have a new dimension, a very, very substantial risk of myocarditis, an inflammation of the heart, sometimes fatal. Been discovered to occur at a rate 25 times higher than normal in people who have been vaccinated, particularly young people and particularly young men. For some reason, that isn't the reason for that isn't known yet, but perhaps there will be some investigation now that this has been acknowledged in an undeniable way in the media. The CDC is going to convene an emergency session to discuss it. Germany has, I believe, suspended vaccinations for the immediate moment. The worst problem of this myocarditis inflammation has been discovered in Israel, and Israel is, I think, reviewing the entirety of their program at the moment as well. But nonetheless, everyone is still being urged hard to get the vaccine. Now, I want to share an article that I came across recently by Kit Knightley of Off Guardian, and it discusses data manipulation on the from the CDC on the infection rates and the effectiveness of the vaccine in preventing them. The article is titled "More Flagrant Data Manipulation from CDC." New report is further evidence that CDC is deliberately hiding post-vaccine breakthrough cases. And it's a short article. I'm going to read the whole thing to you. A new report published just yesterday has provided yet more evidence that the CDC is manipulating data to conceal the number of breakthrough infections. A breakthrough infection or breakthrough case is defined as a person who tests positive for SARS-CoV-2 infection despite already being fully vaccinated. And this new report finds that the CDC's official record of breakthrough cases is likely a substantial undercount. Going on to explain, the report says the national surveillance system relies on passive and voluntary reporting, and data might not be complete or representative. Many persons with vaccine breakthrough infections, especially those who are asymptomatic or who experience mild illness, might not seek testing. Now, that's partly accurate, but it's also a pretty major lie by omission, says Knightley in his article. It is probably true that vaccinated people with no symptoms are unlikely to seek testing, but it is also true that on March 17th, the CDC updated their advice on testing policy to specifically exclude such people from testing protocols. And he includes a screen cap of the testing guidelines the CDC put out at that point, which reads, who should get tested for current infection? And there's a little bullet point list here. People who have symptoms for COVID-19. Most people who have had close contact within 6 feet for a total of 15 minutes or more over a 24-hour period with someone with confirmed COVID-19. But fully vaccinated people with no COVID-19 symptoms do not need to be tested following an exposure to someone with COVID-19. So, again, they're saying don't bother testing people who have been vaccinated, even though they have engaged in or been found to have suffered these risk factors that they otherwise would consider necessary to test for. So while it's certainly true that breakthrough cases are likely a substantial undercount, it is dishonest to pretend that this is just an accident of the system. Rather, the system is specifically designed to hide such cases. Of course, this report only goes up to the end of April. The undercount will only have gotten worse since then because the CDC changed their rules again to make it even harder to keep an accurate count of breakthrough cases. As we wrote last week, as of May 1st, the CDC will no longer be counting mild or asymptomatic cases as breakthrough infections, choosing to focus only on hospitalizations and deaths. According to the CDC's own report, though, over a quarter, 27%, of breakthrough infections were asymptomatic, and a further 61% were only mildly ill. Conversely, only 10% of them were ever hospitalized, and only 2% died. Quoting the study here, I think he goes on, based on preliminary data, 2,725, 27%, in other words, vaccine breakthrough infections were asymptomatic. 995, that's 10%, of patients were known to be hospitalized, and 160, or 2%, of patients died. So the CDC has taken their substantial undercount and then slashed it by 90%. The official figures moving forward will be so inaccurate as to be completely useless. The CDC claims these changes will help maximize the quality of the data collected on cases of greatest clinical and public health importance, but that is an obvious and absurd lie. Statistical studies have shown up to 86% of COVID cases never experience symptoms. To exclude such cases from your vaccine effectiveness studies is to poison your data in order to prop up a predetermined conclusion. It is, at the very best, extremely poor science. Of course, the truth is far more cynical even than that. From the beginning of the so-called pandemic, waves of asymptomatic cases were deliberately created by running unreliable PCR tests on hundreds of thousands of perfectly healthy people every day. The entirely predictable false positives were called cases, and these manufactured cases of COVID-19 were used to build up the illusion of a global plague. This was a prolonged campaign of deception in order to bring about sweeping changes in the construction of our society. To this point, asymptomatic cases have been the backbone of the COVID narrative. But now the CDC has attempted to remove them from the reckoning by instructing medical labs and hospitals around the country to stop looking for them, but only in those who have had the vaccine. This is a new prolonged campaign of deception, spinning the narrative that these untested experimental vaccines truly are effective, quote unquote, against a pandemic that was built on statistical smoke and mirrors. In short, before the vaccine, they needed asymptomatic infections to create a problem. After the vaccine, they are actively hiding asymptomatic infections because their existence undermines their solution. Breakthrough infections existing in anything approaching large numbers effectively means one of three things is true. Either the tests are unreliable, the vaccines are ineffective, or both. To anyone interested in the truth, keeping an accurate count of these breakthrough infections is therefore vitally important. The corollary of that, of course, is that anyone attempting to conceal, minimize, or ignore them is not interested in the truth. Such behavior is, in fact, a tacit admission of deception. All right, that's the end of the article. Knightley makes very well. There is an effort here to conceal the fact that people who have received the vaccine are getting the infection anyway. And so the vaccine is not too effective, but they want to minimize that fact because they want people to take this vaccine. They want people to take this vaccine despite the fact that it has the risks we discussed in the first half hour, despite the fact that it is unnecessary for the vast bulk of the population on which it is now being pushed, and despite the fact that even those who receive the vaccine do not actually become proof against reinfection, as is shown by the numbers and the practices that Kit Knightley just revealed for us. So with all of that in mind, and I do want everyone to keep that all closely in mind, we're going to listen to a little warm up of some thoughts that have been had by some folks about what's going on here and where this where some of this is leading. And then my guest Sophia Smallstorm is going to join me, and we're going to discuss all this at some length. So enjoy this little clip. Now,
since COVID-19 was declared a pandemic, many have speculated that it's been planned by a group of tech elites who are dictating to governments globally. But do these ideas carry any weight? And what might their motives be for orchestrating a global pandemic? To understand, we must first explore a significant shift that's been taking place in our economy, one that only a minority of people are aware of. It's called the Fourth Industrial Revolution. To date, there have been three industrial revolutions. The first happened in the late 1700s with the invention of the steam engine, which led to the creation of factories and a booming textile industry. In the late 1800s, the second industrial revolution was marked by mass production, as well as new industries like steel and electricity. And the third happened in the late 1900s, which saw the invention of the computer and the internet. Now, the fourth industrial revolution describes the emergence of artificial intelligence and how it integrates more with humans. Artificial intelligence, or AI, can already be seen in our daily lives, from how we check out at the supermarket to how we check in for a flight. But it's far more advanced than most people realize. In August 2020, entrepreneur Elon Musk gave a demo of his new company, Neuralink. Connected to our brains with tiny wires, this microchip is synced with AI, enabling humans to control anything from prosthetic limbs to computer games. This working proof of concept has already been fitted into people. It has the potential to completely transform the way we interact online.
So there's actually a lot of functions that this device could do related to monitoring your health and warning you about a possible heart attack or stroke or other damage, as well as sort of convenience features like playing music. You do a lot. It's sort of like if your phone went at your brain or something.
It's a cyborg. It's a combination. It's a combination of electronics and biology.
Yeah. Things are getting more and more connected.
Kai-Fu Lee is the former president of Google China and Microsoft Research China, as well as the author of New York Times bestseller, AI's Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order. Kai-Fu believes that China will be the AI superpower within 5 years.
For those of you who haven't been to China for the 3 years, please be careful when you go, because your credit card and cash may not be accepted. China has pretty much been taken over by mobile payment. In the age of AI, if data is the new oil, then China is the new Saudi Arabia.
One concern that is topical in the development of AI is the displacement of jobs.
Robots are clearly replacing people's jobs. They're working 24/7. They're more efficient.
So therefore, are you convinced long-term that we're going to have a jobs problem in the world?
Not long-term, but maybe in the next 10 years, within the next 10 years.
You mean it's going to happen much sooner?
Much sooner. If a lot of people will find happiness without working, that would be a happy outcome.
At Amazon fulfillment centers, robots transport items to humans, who then pack them to be delivered. Amazon believes that within 10 years, they will not need a single human to fulfill an order. According to the World Economic Forum, 50% of the workforce will need reskilling by 2025, and it's likely that only a fraction of these will find work, resulting in a large proportion of the workforce becoming unemployed.
Pretty good chance we end up with a universal basic income or something like that due to automation. You know, people have time to do other things and have more complex things, more interesting things, certainly more leisure time. And then we've got to figure out how we integrate with a world in the future with advanced AI.
Yeah, you know, people have all that leisure time and all that. It's a great sales pitch. But I frankly don't really believe that too many people, especially too many people who are of the sort that ensconce themselves in compounds of enormous acreage with walls around them and do not allow the teeming masses access, are real enthused about the idea of maintaining a world with 7 billion plus people on it, most of whom are doing nothing. They don't have a job. They have no function. They might be thought of by those elites as useless eaters. Maybe I'm wrong. That very much could be. But it's something that I think needs to be borne in mind. So with that, I want to bring my guest on now, Sophia Smallstorm. As I said earlier, a person I longtime friend of mine. I consider Sophia something of a polymath. A lot of eclectic knowledge arrived at by hard study and a lot of deep thought. And she knows a lot about a lot of things, and she's going to help talk through this issue of artificial intelligence and the new normal that is being proposed. And which is the impetus for which is seen in this apparently mindless, indefensible, irrational push for a universal vaccination with an experimental drug that is useless to most people and known to be harm-causing in many cases, actually likely represents a considerably greater threat to the well-being of the recipients than the disease against which they are intended to be protected or purported to be protected by this experimental vaccine drug. So, Sophia, are you with me?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Good, good. Great to hear your voice. So we opened up today talking about the known and obvious downsides to the big vaccine push, and implied, at least if not directly, spoke of the inexplicability of that push under those circumstances. The COVID-19, whatever else it may be, has long been known to be a relatively modest problem. In its worst cases, it was acknowledged even by quirky of voice as Anthony Fauci as having the threat equivalent of a relatively mild seasonal flu back in the spring of last year. And nothing has changed except that the number, the risk factors, the infection fatality rate and so forth have done nothing but go down steadily ever since. And at the same time, as the vaccines were rolled out, in their experimental status, never tested for more than a couple of months, and still in an experimental emergency authorization status. More and more problems have been found with them, lots and lots of fatalities relative to past vaccine practices. The people who try and defend these things argue that, well, considering that, hundreds of millions of vaccine doses have been delivered, the thousands of deaths that have resulted is a relatively insignificant percentage, and that's true. However, vaccines in the past that resulted in a tenth of the fatalities were yanked from the market as a result of, in a reaction to that relatively low rate of adverse reaction. And yet this one, people are just brushing past it. They're brushing past it completely. Again, ignoring the fact that it is an unnecessary vaccine for most people. It's completely unnecessary, actually likely nothing at all but harmful to anyone who has been infected already and already has a robust and durable immune response. So this is being done for some reason. I'm not prepared to say what that reason is, but I think that speculation by the people who put together A New Normal, that video we just heard a little excerpt of, suggested the possibility that this is that the pandemic was a deliberate act in order to facilitate a change in the structure of society, a worldwide change in the structure of society to suit their own purposes. And connected with all that is the artificial intelligence concept, which, of course, has been proving out more and more year by year in every possible way. It is successful. It's a successful economic actor, as we heard of the Amazon warehouse experience. Their robots are doing most of the work now. They will soon be doing all of the work. Those will be 100% automated affairs. No jobs for any human being in those facilities. The people who have to pay for work being done, people like the people running Amazon, for instance, are delighted at being able to replace people who have to have healthcare and pensions and take coffee breaks and maternity breaks and what have you, replaced by things that need none of those. They're cheaper, they're more reliable. To you know, the germaphobes among that ruling class group, they're more sanitary as well. So come on, Sophia, let's bounce off that. What does all this suggest to you? And tell us what you know about artificial intelligence as well.
Well, Pete, I mean, there is so much to say, and I don't know how much time I have to say this.
Well, right now you have about 3 or 4 minutes to get started on it.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, I can say a lot
started.
In 4 minutes,
I know,
right?
You can, but we will have a half an hour afterwards to say more. So go ahead and get started, and let's go where we go.
Well, let's just start with COVID-19 having been a pretext, right? That's all it was. It served as the pretext for what you're calling and others are calling the Great Reset. Our world was run initially by governments protecting property. They didn't protect people in the old days. And that principle of property became a principle of labor once the Industrial Revolution boomed and goods were produced. So that put a little more power into the hands of the people. Now we are moving into what I call the principle of robotics. And this is the installation of artificial intelligence algorithms for social and governmental and legal control. This is the Great Reset.
Yeah. Absolutely, that appears to be the case, and it's served there to serve the interests of a small number of people who happen to have acquired enormous wealth over recent times, and who have at one point or another, I've seen the proposed speculation that they have concluded, some of them at least, some of the futurists among them have concluded that 500 million people are enough to do everything that the world, or that they, anyway, need to have done in the world. 500 million people is an optimal population in the eyes of some of these folks and their speculative, the futurists among them.
Yes, so the vaccine is the attempt to colonize us on the cellular level inside our bodies through biotech to take control of the most minuscule components of human biology and eventually all biology. Mm-hmm. So we are having the intrusion of algorithms and technology taking us over through their collection of big data, which we provided them with through all these social media platforms that we so enthusiastically participated in.
Everybody, right? Hits the okay button.
And I used to think, Pete, in the old days, that social media was to observe us. They wanted all our family recipes. They wanted all our photos. They wanted every little bit of information we were willing to, you know, glop up there on the
right.
Social media billboards. Because I thought they were observing in order to market to us.
Yeah,
to
it was a commercial.
Trends.
It was a commercial purpose. That was the was what it appeared
right.
to be.
Right. But I have learned since then that this is called machine learning. The
yep.
more machines observe what humans do, they become like us.
Yeah, and capable of interacting with us in ways that we did not anticipate necessarily. Okay, break is coming. We'll be back on the other side, folks.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2 skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.